Welcome to the Military Millionaire Podcast, where we teach service members, veterans, and their families how to build wealth through personal finance, entrepreneurship, and real estate investing. I'm your host, David Perret, and together with my co-host, Alex Felice, we're here to be your no BS guides along the most important mission you'll ever embark on, your finances.
Vehicle 1, you're clear to depart friendly lines.
Roger, Vic 1, Oscar Mike. Welcome to the Military Millionaire Podcast, Rocky. This is the first time we've ever done a recording like this. And this is about as impromptu as it gets, which is pretty much my style, I think, at this point. As people come and they're like, wow, this was planned-ish. We are currently sitting in RubeCon at the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference with Steve Stewart in his wonderful booth using his mics and having a good time. And, essentially, the guest that I had planned stuff for lost his voice, having way too much fun last night. Seth was recovering, I suppose. But, I mean, it is gone. There's nothing there. I don't know if you've seen him today, but you should make it a point to say hi because it's gone.
It's a good thing he spoke yesterday.
Yeah, he'd be in trouble for sure. So, what are you speaking on at the conference?
I am speaking on profit first and cash flow.
Awesome, and we will dig into that as we go. But why don't you give the listeners a little bit of the backstory? So we've known each other forever, at least I don't know, 3-4 years, and just hadn't ever gotten in the podcast.
Further than that, were you at ISI? No.
Mm-mm.
Where did we originally
FinCon
meet?
FinCon World, and then we were in
a
podcaster mastermind with Dan Mackin. Right? Was that? It was Dan. No, it wasn't Dan. It was.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Oh. Yes. That was way back in the day.
Yeah.
Okay. So FinCon that. And you were at GoBundance, though, weren't you?
I still am. Yeah.
You're still there. Okay. So we met there as well.
Yeah.
Multiple. We've been around.
Yeah. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? We'll have some fun.
So I'm not military.
No.
I did ROTC in college.
Oh, there you go.
And they wanted me to sign up like 6 years of my life or 8 years of my life. And I was 18. And I'm like, that's too much of my life. And they wouldn't guarantee me anything. That military was changing then. I think that was from before everyone went active to then everyone was reserves. And they were really paring down the military. And I didn't like taking orders, so... Didn't work out. I'm an immigrant. So my parents came here when I was very young, started with nothing. The weird thing, though, is we talked about money, which nobody else does.
No.
I didn't learn that till much, much later in life.
What culture would your family immigrate from?
I'm from India.
That seems like it makes more sense from a financial standpoint. Is it? It culturally? I mean... I don't know if they teach it in India, but everybody I know who's from India is very good with money.
Many of us are. And we're actually from this one part of India where we're the best with money.
Oh, yeah?
It's known.
Oh. And what part of India is that?
It's a small place called Sindh. And, you know, here it's a very small place. But whenever, like, within the Indian groups you talk, they're like, oh, you're from there. You must be good with money.
So I've never been to India. I don't know the culture that much other than, you know, don't eat cows. But my experience seems like India is very, I don't want to say classist, but very, like the apprentice model, it seems like it's very much alive. Like I know in the hotel world, the last name Patel owns probably more hotels than any like non-Hilton, you know.
They own Hiltons family. Too.
Oh, I'm sure they own everything.
I get discounts because we get the friends and family.
I joke about it, but there's a Facebook group named Patel Hotel Motel that's got 55,000 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And people post jobs on there, and we found a manager there. And of the 7 offers we got last year to buy our hotel, 4 of them were people with the last name Patel. And I just bought a hotel from someone with the last name Patel. So I'm like, I don't know what, like that family, that generational line is there. They know what they're doing in hospitality.
So Patel is like Smith.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
All right.
So that's
so it is a, but they're all from a certain part of the country too, different part than I am, but they're just taught, we're all taught to work hard, save money, build wealth.
Yeah.
It just ingrained. Even growing up, it was just like, I graduated college and it wasn't congratulations, you graduated. It was like, what are you doing your master's? I'm like, I've had enough. But it that's just the expectation of success, the expectation that you're wise with money and that you'll be wealthy.
Yeah. So, okay, so your family taught finances at an early age, and immigrated with minimal. My mom's family immigrated from Ireland in the potato famine days, so similar, but he was a much different on the money side, like just a straight construction guy, to make my hands fall apart and work until the day I die. Where'd you go from there? Where'd you get your master's in?
So I have a Bachelor of Science in Economics, and I have an MBA, and neither of them taught me how to build wealth. Neither of them taught me how to really look at business financials and make a difference. And yeah, when you look back, I didn't realize how little school taught about money. And yet we go to school to make money. It's one of the biggest anomalies out there. Is that the right word?
I know what you're going for, but.
Yeah.
Put me on the spot.
It's okay.
So it's all good. I'm going to think about it the whole day, and I'm going to come back to you. It's going to be great.
Just edit it in.
Yeah, there we go. I'll just sound really smart. I'll be like, it's this on like a different mic. Yeah, no one will know. But yeah, it is an interesting concept when you think about, like, we don't know anything. I mean, when I think back to early military Dave, somebody had told me, hey, you should put 10% or 20% of your paycheck into your thrift savings plan and, your IRA. And I'm like, well, that's great. Okay, cool. And I was doing that. But nobody told me you should probably change the fund allocation from G fund, which is all bonds, to something that actually gains with the stock market. So I joined in 2008 to 2015, I knew nothing. And the market did skyrocket,
Did bond funds.
I gained an average of 2.3% over that 7 years.
Well, so that wasn't a good bond fund.
Bonds,
and that's what I think people don't realize. Bonds have done historically well up until about 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
But you had to actually own the bonds. And it was because bonds are inversely related to interest rates. Mm. So here's the thing. Like, if you bought a bond in 2000, it was paying 8%. Wow. Now, up until a couple of years ago, that was unheard of, right?
Yeah.
In the bank, you got not even 1%. So if you had an 8% bond that you were willing to sell, it was a lot more valuable than a 1% bond.
Absolutely.
And so that's where the value of the bond skyrocketed. But it's another one of those things that you just don't think about because it's an inverse relationship. And so I think a lot of people don't realize. However, the opposite happens. When you've got a 1% bond and interest rates go to 8%, your bond's worth nothing.
Yeah. Which is kind of where we're at right now.
Which is where we're at right now. And
yeah.
I think people think inflation's going to be over soon. And I lived through 18% CD rates. Inflation's here for a little bit. And I think you should plan on it.
And when you say, and I agree, I think the only people who think inflation is going to go away are the ones who are listening to the news.
Like, yeah. Oh, wow. We're being told that things are great.
Yes, you are. I bought our good friend Alex Felice loves obscure books by dead people and crazy economic books and all these books that nobody reads. He likes to find books that nobody can read so that he can go and be like, have you read this book? You should read this. I think.
And I go, yes. And then Alex is like, oh, that's why I love you.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, Alex. And he's like, yeah.
If he's recommending a book, it's usually a pretty solid read. I bought him a book the other day, and it's labeled Modern Economic Policy, and it's 200 pages. And the first 199 just say print money. That's the only words on the page. And the last page says keep on printing. And I was like, here you go, Alex. This is a good read for you. And he's like,
that's hilarious.
But so we're in that environment. When you talk about it's here to stay, what do you think makes sense from a investing standpoint? I feel like people are trying to find, there's a lot of options out there, but if CDs go to 15%, I'm all in. I'll drop some money into a CD and enjoy it, but I haven't
Correct.
Seen that yet.
And that's why, like, Wall Street thinks all this money is going to come off the sidelines that's invested in money markets. And if people are getting I know 5.5% is not great, right? But if you have 5.5% guaranteed, people are much more apt to go, you know what? I'm not going to take a risk today.
Yeah.
You're not paying me a risk premium. The opposite, though, is what people don't think about. Your mortgage becomes an asset.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a 3% mortgage,
gold.
You're gold, right? Or, especially for you military people, if you've got an assumable loan or you can assume someone's 3% VA loan, all of a sudden, the price of that property, I would pay a premium for the property because the underlying mortgage is where the value is. But you got to be able to realize that and think about that. And I don't think most people are taught that.
No, I think that's very much, it's scary to have debt, quote unquote. And I agree. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, I've sold some properties off this year, but anything I own that's on a fixed rate, like we have a hotel, you'll appreciate this. We own a hotel right now. We were locked at 4.78 for 25 years, fixed on a $1 million 40-unit hotel. Now, we actually did refi it, but we're still 25 years fixed. We went to 6.55, and the reason we did it is we were on a swap debt. So essentially, it was an insurance company that wanted to go re-lend their money at a higher interest rate. They paid us $130,000 to swap the rate. And I did the math. I was like, if we took this $130,000 at 0% interest and just added it to our mortgage payment, we'd come out $11,000 on top of the monthly payments. And I think we can just reinvest it. And, you know, so we took the money and ran. But still, we're locked at 6.5 for 25 years. And it's assumable. So we just sold the property, seller financed, and we're just holding the underlying debt because it's, I'm like, dude, we can give you a 5% rate. We'll arbitrage and we're going to make money on it. It's gold.
It is gold. And it's thinking outside standard of what everyone's talking about to understand all of that.
Yeah.
Is kind of the key.
Yeah. You're definitely right, though, about the value of a low interest rate, which is creating this whole lock-in effect right now. Which is really, it's really kind of unprecedented what we've seen traditionally, right? The Fed pulls the lever of interest rates and prices kind of compress and demand kind of drops. And then if rates get lower, things, you know, it's like there's supposedly an inverse relationship there. Prices didn't move downward at all. And people are like, what happened to rates?
Well, prices didn't move downward because there was no supply.
Exactly.
And that's what was the other factor in this case. Now, part of that, and I don't pay attention to all the metrics, but I think we stopped building in 08, and it sounds like we never really started building very much, especially single family. Nobody is building low price residential.
No.
Right? So that was the other issue. All the builders were building fancy houses because that's where they make their money. And so we have this.
When you get all this, the big expensive markets like San Diego won't let you build out. So you got to try to build up. And that's not, you know, cheap. And then, you know, people for some reason still don't want to move to like the Midwest where you can afford to live very reasonably. I mean, we both live in Missouri and I love it here, you know? So it's funny because I talk examples online. I'll use, you know, I always use like $100,000 house as like my benchmark because it's easy math. I'm like, oh, 10,000 on 100,000. For some reason, that's easier for people to grasp than adding a zero to both sides. And somebody always comments like, oh, yeah, $100,000 house. OMG. I wish. And I'm like, I bought an $85,000 duplex 3 weeks ago. You live in the wrong spot.
And I think that's what people just don't realize. And that's why the real estate in the South went crazy because all these people were living in New York and they're like, what do you mean it's that cheap? I'm like, hello, the rest of the world doesn't cost what New York costs.
Yeah, you ever want to have fun, you just go find somebody in San Francisco and you show them what they could buy for the same price home in, you know, Springfield, Missouri. The $1 million house buys you a literal castle. I mean, you might as well have a moat. It's crazy. We're talking 9,000 square feet on 60 acres for $1 million.
And that's why I left Jersey. Like, yeah. I looked around at a very young age, and I'm like, even if I made six figures. Now, I realized this was the early 90s. So, you know, money was different.
Six figures
was a lot back then.
Yeah.
You were in the top percentages.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, even if I make six figures, I'm going to have a crappy house. I'm like, this is not good. I left and I moved to Pennsylvania, and my mortgage and taxes were less than just taxes on the house in Jersey. Forget about buying the house, just the taxes on the house in Jersey. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
I was like, and then when I'm out there, everyone's like, oh, I wish I could move. I'm like, okay, well, we're stuck here with our job. No, you're not.
Especially not now.
Not now. But even back then, you weren't.
No, absolutely.
You could figure a way out, but.
Yeah, I agree. If you have a skill that's valuable enough, people want it, you can work very well off anywhere.
But see, here's the thing people don't realize. I did a lot in the medical space. Doctors actually make more money in the middle of Missouri than they do in New York City, because New York City's high demand, so the pay drops dramatically. Whereas in Missouri, you can't find a doctor, so they pay you twice as much as they would in New York, and your cost of living is a tenth as much. You're really living the life.
One of my best friend's fiance just finished residency and moved into her first job, you know, within the last 6 months. And to your point, she, even in our area, she was, you know, she lives in the Springfield area, and she moved she's been working 45 to an hour and a half away, because in these really small towns, they'll pay $50,000 a year more. Plus they pay for your travel. And so she's making, a significant amount more money to just drive a little bit further to work, because of exactly that. Nobody wants to work in a town of, 500 people. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, let's not get started on income tax in New York versus the, Missouri, or it's crazy. You think California, you're like 9% now or whatever, maybe 13%. All my friends are leaving. Anyway, so none of that though matters if you can't actually manage your money. I mean, you can make more money and have great expenses, and expense creep will come up and it'll get you. So you are a practitioner of the same banking method I use, though I think you're probably a little bit more consistent and better at it than I am. If you had a look at my accounts right now, you would judge me. But profit first is something that I think anybody and everyone should be familiar with. So if you want to give just a short kind of synopsis, I guess really I'm curious, when did you first get into that world of accounting?
I joined Profit First about 4.5 years ago now.
Okay.
I was on the personal finance side. Here's what I learned. Everyone wants to get rich this weekend. Nobody wants to get rich slowly. I was like, I can't make money here. Like, even though I can teach people how to be millionaires, they're not biting. And so I said, okay, I'm out. What I realized, and I was really shocked, I assumed business owners understood the business of business and knew their numbers. It turns out they don't. They have no idea what they're doing financially.
You're calling me out.
Oh, sorry.
Give me a smile for the camera.
It's normal.
Oh,
everybody, it's totally normal, because business owners are people and they went into business to do what they loved. And all right, let's face it. Nobody loves accounting, right? Math is hard. Math sucks. I mean, going back to school, math is not hard, right? But in America, they make it hard.
Yeah. Basic accounting is not, basic, balance sheet is not complex.
And I say that.
Monotonous.
I tell people the principles in math that we use in business, you don't have to be smarter than a fifth grader, right? Because it's all basic math, and yet people are allergic to it or whatever. I didn't realize how much of a skill set I had. I can look at a spreadsheet and I see a story. I see anomalies. I see things happening. I can look at a tax return, same thing. I'm like, oh, interesting. I wonder why this didn't happen. And that didn't, like a million things come to my mind. Let's turn some knobs, and it's not hard. The difference between rich and poor is very small.
Yeah.
It really is, and I don't think people realize that. A handful of small steps compounded over time, and you get tremendous success. Speaking of compounding, do you know how much a dollar compounded for 31 days is doubled?
It comes up. I don't remember the exact number, but it's like $3 million.
No, you're way off.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's because you were using the penny.
Oh.
Right? And see, we have Joe Biden now. We have inflation. We got to use a dollar.
30 million then?
You're still way off. 300
million? Where are we at?
A billion.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm way off. I've not done that.
A dollar doubled for 31 days is $1 billion. Do you know how much you lose if you wait till tomorrow to start?
Half
a billion.
Yeah.
But how many people, everyone goes, I'll wait till tomorrow. It's only $1. Sorry. You just gave up half a billion. You wait 2 days, you gave up 750 million. 3 days, you gave up 900 million. Go back to bed. It's all over for you.
That's such a better way to put it than I always tell people. I'm like, look, dude, if you're 18 and you're going to contribute to your IRA, every dollar you put in is worth $16 if you start when you're 40. I'm like, people are like, oh, that's not exciting to talk to. I'm like, it's not. You're right. But this is when you should. I try to tell people, like, look, if you can max out your TSP for like 4 years, you could literally never touch it again. And you could live on the 4% rule and you hit retirement. Now you've got the biggest safety net in the world and you can go take asymmetric bets and you make one hit. You're good. You just retire, you know? But people won't set themselves up with that baseline. God, that's such a better way to put it, though. Because you're right. I take out the one double. Compound interest is great.
You want to give up half $1 billion? Go ahead. Sleep in.
Yeah.
Have fun. I'll take it.
That's, I think, one of my favorite, you know, it's toted all over the finance world, but the study on the marshmallows, like the kids where they give them a marshmallow and they're like, we'll be back in 10 minutes. If you still have your marshmallow, they'll give you a second one. And then they followed all the kids who actually made it and had, you know, the ability to delay gratification. And in almost every metric, they're more successful in life. And, you know, so I don't know how you instill that because I'm trying to figure out how to instill delay gratification.
You know what would happen with my kids if we were in that study?
Kill each other. One would eat all the marshmallows.
No, I think they'd sell their marshmallow to the kid next door.
Oh, there you go. So you're doing something right then. That kid would eat that crap. So I would love to figure out how to like instill that because, the ability to play the long game, you know, that's where you win.
It's real simple. So how well do you think you could play golf if I gave you a book and a video on golf?
Probably about as well as I play golf right now. And I'm really good at getting drunk and driving the golf cart around. Ask anyone listening, ask Blake Daly and Steve ODB, and they'll tell you some great stories about me hitting into the wrong fairway and then taking out a guy on his golf cart.
So bottom line is, in order to learn to play golf, you need a club and a ball.
Yeah.
If you want kids to learn about money, give them money. Yeah. Give it to them. Don't rules around getting money to begin with, because you create a whole bunch of bad money mindsets. Mm. You create all of this anxiety around money. So here's your money. Now, guess what? I'm not buying you candy. You want candy? You got money. Go buy it.
Mm.
Now we're going to have a conversation. Okay. So we're at the gas station. How much is that candy bar? $2.50. You know, if you wait 15 minutes, we're stopping at the supermarket. Let's see how much it is there. Oh, look, it's $4 for $2.50 at the supermarket. Now, what? Let's wait 15 more minutes. We're going to Costco. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's $20 for $10.
Yeah.
Yes, it's more, but what's your cost per piece of candy?
Yeah.
Maybe now you and your sister can combine your money or save up for 2 weeks. It's a choice. You want one candy bar, you want 20 candy bars. And we did that. And back when my kids were young, I did it with my son with Pokemon cards. And we went to eBay. You want 200 cards for $10? You got to wait 2 weeks for them to ship it to you. And he did it all the time because he understood that. So my son called me when he was 20. He hadn't turned 21 yet. He already graduated college because college is expensive. There's no reason to sit around and waste time in college if you can crank through it. So we can even talk about how you crank through college. But he called me before his 21st birthday and said, yeah, Dad, I now have a six-figure net worth. Like, congratulations, son.
That's awesome.
And they know, they spend, but they spend appropriately. They know how to build wealth. They understand the power of compounding. They're doing their tax returns on their own. They've learned to hate the government because of how much they have to pay in taxes. They get it. And they start to see that, and they start to see how these things, they're learning adulting young.
This is a great way to teach it. And I'm going to start doing that. It might be a little weird because, so it's going to be me trying to teach and the other person.
Do you know the number one fastest teacher of learning about taxes was? And this is really surprising. It's actually Joe Biden.
Interesting.
You know why?
Well, I have no idea.
They changed the tax rules and said, hey, if you're 18 and you're in college and like you're offing your parents or this or that, you can get a $2,500 deduction and you don't have, like, they'll send you the check. Hmm. And so all of a sudden the kids are on TikTok teaching each other how to get this, whatever the money was, $2,000 from the government in stimulus funding while they were still in college and arguing with their parents about stopping being independent and all of these things.
Man.
It was hilarious to watch, but man, money talks, right?
Oh my gosh. And then they got their first tax bill and they're like, wait a minute, why this was this
well,
was a bad deal.
They didn't get a tax bill because they went to a silly college, got a silly degree, and now they're working in Starbucks. They don't make enough to pay taxes.
You sure you're from India? You don't believe in college?
I used to, but honestly, I came to the realization that unless you're getting an advanced degree in a, what's the return on investment? Like when I went to college, it was cheap.
Yep.
Today, like I told my kids, you can go to Ivy League, but I'm not paying for it. So you figure it out. And my son still argues with me over that. And I'm like, dude, your university was next door to Carnegie Mellon. You could have gone over and networked with whoever the hell you wanted. You were allowed to take classes there. Your tuition bill was literally, I think, 20 or 25% of what CMU was. Now he's going to Georgia Tech online for like pennies and he's whining because he's got to pay the bill. And I'm like, dude, at the end of the day, if you've got a master's from Georgia Tech and comp sci, who cares? Like, it's all a label.
Absolutely.
You're not learning. Calculus is calculus everywhere you go. And then it's a matter of networking. And I think in today's world, you don't need to go to that university. Actually, so we are sitting here in Union Hall. I was sitting here about 5 or 6 years ago, right over there on the other side of the hall. My kids were in robotics. This was the world championship. They're one of the top contending teams. They're networking with everybody. So all these kids who were geeky are making friends, and that's going to carry through to wherever they come out.
Not a bad industry to know people in.
It's not a bad industry to know people in. And who was here were the colleges. You know, Yale's here. Oh, we love you people. You got awarded. We want to talk to you. I go, how much money are you going to give me? They laughed at me, and I laughed at them. I said, F you, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Which is interesting because Harvard apparently supposedly has like $20 billion sitting in a checking account right now. Who knows whether any of that's true or not?
It is very true. Harvard knows something very, very simple. There's a sucker born every minute who will give money.
Harvard, when you say Harvard, it's really just the name and the networking. And you're right. You can network anywhere with anyone, whether online or, my entire community platform network for the vast majority is social media. And so I very much agree with you. Unless you're going to be a doctor, a CPA, a lawyer, like something super, like hyper specific, I don't think there's a...
So my wife and I argue because she's a CPA.
Mm.
And she'll come to me, she'll be like, oh, did you see this guy? He's this whatever, and he makes this much per hour. And I look at her, I go, you know your husband makes a lot more than that, right? And I don't have the CPA designation on mine.
Yeah.
I think people are fooled. There are the designations carry weight when you're smart enough to use them in specific areas. So half of attorneys don't even practice law.
Yep.
Okay. So just getting a degree doesn't mean anything. Now, you get a degree and you were go work for a top law firm, that's wonderful, but you're working 80, 100 hours a week. Like,
oh, my attorney was miserable before he became a partner and more miserable after he became a partner.
So what are you chasing?
Yeah.
Misery?
Yeah.
But like, that's silly.
So far, like, my favorite example of this, because I own, you know, one hotel and I own a big chunk of another hotel. You know, one's just your typical mom and pop 40 unit in Missouri, and the other's a boutique 130 key nice place in right outside Smoky Mountain National Park. And I was on a date with this girl, and she got her bachelor's in hospitality. I was like, oh, that's awesome. She couldn't get a job anywhere because they wanted experience. And I'm like, oh,
Starbucks.
Like, yeah. So she's working on her master's in accounting. And, you know, I'm like, well, I hope you enjoy that job because they're still going to want experience, but pretty funny.
Accountants are not paid well. That's why nobody wants to be an accountant anymore and a CPA, because if you look at their income compared to other industries, they have not kept up on the curve.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's a big part of it is understanding what the outcomes are, where the money really is, and not just today, but where's the money going to be in 20 years? Because so much stuff becomes obsolete.
Oh, it's especially right now. It's so interesting because, well, we've got the whole AI revolution going on, but a lot of the places that are getting replaced by AI right now aren't what I would have expected to get replaced by AI.
Lawyers?
Well, it's a lot of blue collar stuff. It's like not like manufacturing, but like
manufacturing is getting replaced by technology. Like, I know they're bringing factories back to the United States right now, but when the factory left the United States, there was 1,000 people working in it. When the factory came back to the United States, there were 10 people working in it, and 8 of them were computer programmers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's valid. And then when you look at examples like, we all said, oh, well, AI is never going to be able to reproduce, you know, my creative, whatever. Like, dude, oh, my gosh, I can go on to AI right now and create a month's content in 15 minutes. Might not be as engaging as a video, but you can do videos with AI, too, if you spend a little bit more time. It's getting pretty intense. So, yeah, there's all kinds of things that who knows what the future will hold. But, you know, man, we went all over the place. We didn't actually give the rundown on Profit First, so.
Oh. So Profit First is simple. Pay yourself first, right? You've been taught that principle, right?
Absolutely.
Everyone is told in business, sales minus expenses equals profit. Well, then profit becomes a leftover.
Yeah.
It's an afterthought. So we tell people sales minus profit equals expenses. Take your profit, learn to constrain your spending, because just like in businesses in your personal life, we get, you know, the overspending continues quickly, and business owners like, you got to invest to grow, and you got to reinvest your money because that's how you grow. And since I'm the guy telling you to reinvest your money, you're going to have to give it to me to help you grow. Like, it's all BS.
No, and I love Profit First because, like, still to this day, so January was the best month I've ever had with my company and top line revenue, right? Just because I like to be transparent, it was like 92,705 or something like that, gross revenue. And at the end of the month, like the last day of the month, I had a big bill hit and I was like, whoops. And the reason I said whoops, because I was joking with someone, I was like, I don't get it. I made 90 grand and I still have no money. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's because I maxed my IRA. I paid myself this. I put money there. I paid down debt here. I moved all the things into the right places. And my operations account was just where it needed to be to make it into the next month. But then I just moved some money out of cash reserves and, you know, whatever, play that game. But I'm like, I almost prefer living with my operations account, like paycheck to paycheck, just to stuff money everywhere. And, you know, I'm like, that's way easier for me. Because if I leave money in there and somebody's like, hey, I can do this for you for $5,000. I'm like, done.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. That'll grow my business instead of, let me get back to you in a week. And then I think on it, I'm like, it might not be what I need right now.
So how many of those $5,000 ideas actually grew your business?
Yeah, most of them do not. No, I would say the things that grow my business the most that I spend the money on today are very tangible things, like a new, like I did a full redesign and a new website. It was time. Or coaching on very specific things and skills that I want to learn. I'm paying Evan Carmichael's one of his main YouTube strategists right now. I'm like, look, my YouTube, I'm doing all the things, but it's not growing. What am I doing wrong? You know, to me, that's worth it. I mean, we're 3 weeks in, so we'll see. But, you know, but I would rather pay for that, but it was less than $5,000, than, you know, for like,
I think the truth is growing on social media isn't easy. And I will tell you, I think a lot of times people can grow on social media because you're getting likes, but likes aren't dollars.
No.
And I think that's where the disconnect comes in. I don't care what your numbers are. I care how much cash is coming in the door. And I think that's the harder part, is finding the appropriate people to listen to the show, not just all these people liking it because it was funny and giving you $0.
Yeah, I agree. So you should all pay me or leave. No, I'm just obviously joking. Although a review would be great, because I don't ever ask for reviews on my podcast. So that'd be good.
All right. You're all listening. Well, we're not on video, right? But wherever you're listening, there's a like button, you know? Give them a little love. Hit the like button. And then share it with somebody. Tell them how great this episode was at. That's how you get podcasters love.
There you go. And then if you want to actually make money with your business instead of wondering where it goes every week, talk to Rocky and he'll take care of you.
We teach everything that we do for our clients. We share everything on the podcast. I give it all away. There is nothing yet. Profit answer, man. That's all we do. Go build. Because you know what? When people are wealthy, they leave me the hell alone. Right? So societally, they don't have all these crazy ideas anymore because they all have money. They don't need to do silly things in society.
Yeah.
It solves a lot of problems.
Mm. That's a great point. Yeah. They just kind of let their money ride somewhere safe and they chill.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you mentioned it once, but where can people get a hold of you if they'd like to find out more?
My website is profitcomesfirst.com. So you can find me there. You can find links to our different podcasts. You can find my email or whatever you need.
I love it. Well, Rocky, I appreciate you jumping in here for a super last minute in-person recording. I know we got, I think you actually speak at 2 today, right?
I speak at 2, yes.
And I'm at 3, so I'm like, oh, I gotta go make sure all my stuff's tight. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.